Welcome back to another episode of Jenny's Uncensored Pennies. My name is Adam Herrera.
And I am Jennifer Marie Martinez. And today we are kind of picking up from the last full episode that was published, where we had a host, Beverly Lowry, speaking about the balancing act of being mother and teacher. During that conversation, one of the questions that we asked Beverly was what inspired her to be a teacher. And she had a really sweet answer. She said that, I forgot what grade she said though, but it was definitely in elementary school.
I'm pretty sure it was like second grade.
Right, like second or third grade.
It was young.
And she had this teacher that she just adored, basically. And I mean, just resonated with her. You know, she felt that that teacher met a lot of the emotional needs that she wasn't getting at home. Mm-hmm. And I have a sister that's a teacher. And so I asked my sister Karina what inspired her. And I was really surprised by her answer. I thought she was going to give me like the same type of response that Beverly gave. But instead, she said that it was from teaching like Sunday school. And she said Sister Alice's house. So I don't remember how that happened, but at some point we were having church like in somebody's house. Well, Sister Alice's house.
Mm-hmm.
And there were this like older couple, and they had adopted, it was fraternal twin grandsons.
Okay.
And they were about the same age. I don't remember if they were like Karina's age or they were Maida's age, but they were close in age with one of my sisters. And so anyway, so Karina, she would prepare these lessons, like, you know, Bible Sunday school lessons to then teach the kids. And she really enjoyed that. And I actually forgot like that she did that. Hmm. And then when we eventually went to like a church, we also went with, you know, Sister Alice and her husband. Oh, and then it's crazy because then later, now I'm going all over the place, but because then later we ended up at Offerings of Peace Church with Roy, where Roy was our youth pastor. And Roy is, you know, for those of you who don't know who Roy Juarez Jr. is, he's very much my mentor. And he's also now is a motivational speaker, does a lot of youth leadership programs in different school districts, providing, you know, guidance and inspiration to the historically underserved youth in our country.
Y'all can find him at Roy Juarez Jr. on Instagram or Impact Publishing if y'all want to look him up.
Yes, and his speaking company is Impact Truth. But anyway, so all that to say that that's where my sister's inspiration came from, was doing the Sunday school in this church. And then I know then from there, it was like this church was in Castroville, Texas. Then we were going to church in Hondo, and in youth group, we all kind of took turns giving lessons also. There was a designated youth pastor, but I don't know, for whatever reason, like every now and again, like I know I had the opportunity to present, you know, during youth group or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't remember like liking it as much as my sister did, but it was fine. And then I think she just got more opportunities at that church. And then when Roy was her youth pastor, I know that she was very involved as well. But anyway, Beverly also shared, which something that resonated with me, was that she said that school was definitely a place where she felt she could just be Beverly. Really, she could just be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
She could just be herself. And my sister, in a similar way, also said that, you know, she felt very seen at school. My sister is also a middle child.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you that are middle children, I don't know if you experienced this or not, but I guess my sister very much felt like, you know,
black sheep.
Well, not the black sheep, because a lot of people, like, and even to this day, like, adore my sister, almost like prefer my sister.
Yeah, no. Like, it's being the black sheep is not a bad thing. I mean, a lot of people would stereotype it as being quote unquote different, or like a little bit off, or whatever it may be. But no, like the middle child, there's like a lot of good things about them. I mean, obviously being, you know, different from the older or the younger one.
Well, right. And my sister, and still to this day, a lot of her personality is she's like the peacekeeper. She's the one that keeps the peace with the family and wants everybody to be okay.
I could definitely see that.
With
like,
my sister?
Yeah, well, so like with me and my sister, it's just us two.
Right.
Older and younger. And I was always the one that got beat up or like shoes thrown at or.
What?
Well, because she was bigger than me. I mean.
Oh, by her.
But yeah.
And there was nobody in the middle to keep the peace.
To like mediate it. Yeah, exactly. Oh, gotcha. So
like, wait, what?
Or like with my stepdad, Rick, like his daughters. Mm. He has three daughters and, you know, the older one and the younger one were always kind of like the fierce and feisty ones. And then the middle, Kristen, she was always like, yeah, like the mediator, the peacekeeper. Like she knew how to like, you know, how to calm each other down or each one down. It was pretty funny.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. And so, like I said, that really resonated with me, what Beverly said about school, you know, being the place where she felt she could just be Beverly, because I very much felt that same way, where it was like I wasn't expected to. Sure, I was expected to, right, like follow the rules, the class rules, school rules, complete assignments, turn in my assignments. Mm-hmm. Of course, I participate, which I did very well at, because at home, I very much learned that I had to behave, right? Otherwise, there was going to be a really bad consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never wanted to get dirty and I never wanted to get in trouble, because both of those things, you know, meant like a really bad consequence for me. And so that's what I learned. And then schoolwork just came easy for me. I mean, I loved to read. I caught on to most subjects, you know, fairly easy, and then was in like the gifted and talented program or whatever. And so that very much made me feel special, because it was like we would then have like the stuff just for the GT kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so we would go out, I mean, whether it was like a part of each day or whatever, once a week or whatever it was, and it was like something like just for us, and it made me feel very special and seen, right? Being a part of that. But yeah, so I don't know, what was that like for you?
Like elementary or high school?
Right, as far as like the engagement with teachers and maybe even staff or classmates.
Oh, well, I mean, elementary was pretty structured, you know, private Catholic school, you know, prayer in the morning. We'd have our like two periods. Well, we wouldn't call them periods, but like two subjects and then break and then like, but experiences with teachers. I loved my kindergarten teacher, Miss Gonzalez. Oh my God. Like she was like the sweetest person in the world. Even to this day, I'm thinking she's still around, but my parents would see her, you know, around town and say hi and they'd pick up where they left off. And I haven't seen her in years, but she was like the coolest person. Like no one wants to leave kindergarten. Like kindergarten was such a, you know, of a fun, you know, grade level. And then other than that, like the other teachers, I mean, there were some cool ones. Like, I mean, like in second grade, maybe like this is totally random, but like I found out that I had dyslexia because I was not doing well in math. And my parents blamed the teacher for not teaching well enough in math. But yeah, it was, you know, dyslexia wasn't something that people would like first go to, right?
Right.
Or like I don't know, like I would see numbers and, you know, like I would mix them up or like, yeah.
It's interesting that it would be math where they discover that. And that just makes me think of my niece. My youngest sister's daughter also has dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they came to find out that like all the fives, she thought they were S's or something.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. Like I would see numbers backwards. So like if it was 13, I'd see 31.
Okay.
You know, but like dyslexia taught me to check my work twice.
And take your time, probably.
Three times. Take my time, yeah. Or like we discovered that I had test anxiety. And I think a lot of people have that.
Oh, yeah.
But like I would study like all night or like, you know, I would study pretty consistently and come test, like anxiety would shoot up the roof and, you know, I would forget everything or like,
oh yeah,
I would struggle. So, but other than that, I mean, elementary it was cool. Yeah, I mean, K through eight, no middle school, which is, you know, very different from other school districts.
Public school, yeah.
Well, a public school, yeah.
And it's crazy that it's still like that.
It's still like that. And then they have high school, which is crazy. Now they have a high school on top. So like the building is a two-story building.
Mm.
Then they have high school on top and then K through eight on the bottom.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So all these kids of all these different ages all just see each other?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, very different. It's changed a lot. And then, yeah, we had church. We had our own church, like a block down. We'd have mass pretty consistently, like maybe twice a month, you know, like as a school. Mm-hmm. Like we wouldn't have it like every
so week. All the grades together.
We do like our Christmas plays in church or like Easter. Right. We do all that in church. But yeah, it was very religious based teaching also.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went to a Catholic preschool. And I remember, and there's a Polaroid, giving my age, showing my age, but there's a Polaroid of me wearing this like white dress and I'm all happy, like walking back down the aisle. And what it was like, I had to present flowers to a statue. I don't know, probably the Virgin Mary or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, no offense to people that are Catholic, but I'm no longer Catholic. I was Catholic as a child for like
raised Catholic. Yeah.
Yeah. I was raised Catholic maybe until I was like 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to services since then because I've gone to like quinceañeras or, you know, Catholic ceremonies, funerals, whatever. And so I'm like, every time I go to like a Catholic church, I'm like, wow, it's all the like, stuff is just so kind of over the top sometimes, or
yeah,
there's so much to look at,
right? I get distracted,
but also I'm kind of creeped out because I'm like, oh my gosh, all these like statues with the eyes and they're looking at you, and
yeah,
the Jesus on the cross thing that just like weirds me out.
It kind of reminds me of that poster. What is it, Uncle Sam?
Oh, yeah, or like I want you,
the pointing finger like follows you, it's like those eyes just follow you everywhere, just like judging you. Yeah. No, yeah, our like the church I grew up in, Our Lady of Sorrows. Our Lady of Sorrows, yeah.
Oh, like the movie Spanglish where they're like, we're Catholic, we know guilt. Yes, guilt. Yeah. We know it well.
Yeah. called Our Lady of Sorrows, like huge, huge building. Like it looked like a mansion with statues everywhere, you know, the pews, everything. It was huge. But yeah, I mean, like, it's just like all the old statues, like the old, like all the old influence, like the old Catholic influence is still there and alive. Like no remodeling or anything.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, it's like just when you go to Europe and you go to all the cathedrals and whatever. I mean, all of that is the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a landmark.
Right.
And they can't be touched. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, it's like sacred and it's probably like hella expensive too. I mean, now, you know, but anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Another thing that we covered during that conversation, we asked Beverly about like the, what does she call it? I said active shooter drills, but she called it.
Oh, like, well, I don't know. Emergency response. I don't know.
No, I don't remember. Oh my gosh. Terrible. What was it?
But like all those fire drills, like active shooter drills, like,
right,
you know,
just a different drills.
Lockdown drills.
Lockdown. That's lockdown. What it's called. Yeah, it's called lockdown drill. They don't call it active shooter drill. Yeah, yeah, I called it that.
Yeah.
But Anyway, so then I was like, yeah, I mean, I remember what Jacob was probably in kindergarten when Sandy Hook happened. Mm-hmm. And that was just like mind blowing, right? And just heartbreaking when that happened. And then since, and before that, what did we have as far as like school shootings? It was Columbine. Was that?
Yeah.
That was in the 90s.
Yeah.
In Colorado, I believe.
Colorado Springs?
No, no, I don't know.
I think Colorado. Yeah, somewhere in Colorado. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway.
Start with the A, maybe. But
okay. I don't remember. But, well, and so since then, like, there's just been so many more. And I'm not sure when, like, how soon after Sandy Hook they implemented these lockdown drills, if it was maybe right after Sandy Hook or if it was, I don't know, after the next one or what have you. But I remember, you know, coming to that realization that my son, like, this is part of him, his experience going to school, right, is doing these lockdown drills. And I was like, oh my gosh, I mean, I cannot imagine being a kid and having to participate in that, like, just.
Yeah, it's very scary. Like, even, you know, me working at a school district and doing those drills with them, because like I'm right there on campus with them, I participate, just, you know, just to do it.
Well, yeah, because you never know, you could be on campus.
Well, yeah, and I'm an adult and, you know, I'm part of like the staff and, you know, I'd be the one like holding the door, securing the classroom, or, you know, like, yeah, that shit's scary, like, even for me. But I mean, I can't imagine, you know, someone in first grade, TK,
right,
second grade, you know, like, how they process it, or like, what, you know, what teachers tell them, like, it's right. It's about, right, you know.
It's basically like, let's hide from the boogeyman.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, I would think of it that way. I don't know if parents these days talk to their kids about boogeymen.
The kukui. I grew up with a kukui.
For real. Or
my grandma used to say tamalero. Anyways.
Tamalero?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like she, tamales?
Yeah, tamale.
What?
She used to make up stuff. Anyway, that was my grandma. That's a whole different concept.
Aww.
But yeah, like, you know, I speak to admin and or like staff or teachers about these drills. And, you know, they always talk about, you know, what if, you know, knock on wood, of course, but what if it were to actually happen, you
right.
know, to us? And, you know, all these kids, like, fooling around during the drills, not right. staying quiet, you know, cracking jokes or, you know.
And Beverly mentioned that. Yeah, yeah. That, like, a lot being of kids, like, don't take it serious.
Desensitized to it.
Right.
It's, like, being, like, the norm.
Well, and we don't know. Are they desensitized or is it the mindset of, like, that's not going to happen here. It happened in Uvalde. We're so far away. This is Santa Barbara. It's not going to happen.
Kind of like a protection or like maybe like a defense mechanism that they're trying to deal
right.
with. Like, what if, you know, this can't happen to us.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah. And a lot of people like talk about that. Like, you know, if we were in that type of crisis, like, shit. You know, how would these kids respond? How would staff respond? How would admin respond? And yeah, it's really hard to think about.
Right. And on, it wasn't part of the conversation that we recorded, but after we ended the conversation with Beverly, we continued a conversation right after we stopped recording about the drills. And mm-hmm. I had mentioned to her that my youngest sister that works at a courthouse, that they had a lockdown mm-hmm. drill,
mm-hmm.
but people came in, this like team, whatever, they contracted these people to come in and they used blanks. So they're actually shooting guns, but with blanks, and they weren't expecting that. So they were just really, really scared.
That's a trip.
Right. So imagine. And so then
Texas.
Well, no, but you're talking about like kids not taking it serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So apparently Beverly also let us know that they very much did that with staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that they like take it serious.
For sure.
So it feels real. I mean, can you imagine?
It's so messed up that they have to go to that extreme though to take it serious, right? Or like they have to simulate an actual
right.
with blanks. Like, you know, those sound like, you know, like the popping and
Yeah, it's like, horrible.
Yeah. that's like very
traumatizing.
You know, traumatizing. Yeah, exactly. And even to an adult, you know. But like also even having like a presence on these campuses,
like the officers.
Officers, campus security, you know, just police, anything, any type of presence, right? It's still kind of alarming in a way, or like.
Yeah. When I first saw like the police SUV mm-hmm. in front of, and I didn't notice it at Jacobs Elementary School, but right down the street, there's the middle school really
yeah.
close.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what the heck is happening? Why? And yeah. you know, they have it at the high school. And to me, I mean, my high school experience, and we spoke about that with Beverly. We very much had police presence like all the time.
Yeah.
Just because there were a lot of like gangs in the school. I mean, we're right. talking about like my graduating class was like, I don't know, 900 kids.
Yeah.
In one graduating class.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was like thousands of kids in that high school, and to kind of, yeah, like set the tone of mm-hmm. like, we're not fooling around here. Right. We always had an officer. And I believe she mentioned that now there are like multiple. Like the district has their own like police force mm-hmm. in a sense. Mm-hmm. But when I first saw, you know, that police SUV and the officer standing outside of the school, I thought something had happened or what have you. But I mean, it was scary to me.
There's always like at the high school I work at. Yeah. There's always like police, but I mean, right. it's obviously because of the little rascals that the little wannabe gang members that we have here. You know, there's always something going on, and but that presence is alarming, but it's also kind of like, okay, you know,
somebody's here.
They're here. Yeah. They're, you know, they're quick to respond.
Right. Like right? somebody is trained to know what to do.
Exactly. We have a school resource officer, but he's not our school resource officer. We have like an assigned police officer, but mm-hmm. it's like, he's not always on campus or, oh, like, gotcha. You know, a lot has changed, like, in our school district where we don't have school resource officers because obviously we can't afford them. You know, they are highly paid, but yeah, they need to be around.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have campus safety, which is pretty much, you know, adults like my age, just roaming around the hallways, breaking up fights. You know, mm-hmm. trying to like deter kids from not going to class. Mm-hmm. Like I literally, there's literally like campus safety, like looking for kids because they're not in their class. Like that's how bad
oh
it's
my
kind of,
yeah. gosh.
Anyway, it's crazy. But
what were the drills like going elementary? Back to our, yeah, yeah our own
no,
experiences.
So that's funny. I was actually thinking about that. And we only had fire drills, earthquake drills. Fire drill, you line up and you walk out.
Mm-hmm.
Walk out onto the pavement.
And then you just wait.
And then you just wait until you get the all clear. Yeah. And then earthquake, you crawl under your desk.
Like duck and cover or whatever.
Duck and cover. And that was for like a minute or two. And then...
But they would just like sound the alarm.
Yeah. They just sound, yeah. And all I can remember were just those.
Yeah.
Like nothing else. No lockdown, no...
Right.
I mean...
That wasn't a thing growing up.
That's all sheltered we were. Like, we had no lockdown. Like now, I was at a middle school, and we would have a lockdown, but I was like, wait, what's a lockdown for? It's like, oh, you know, not disclosing too much, but a student was having, like, a meltdown.
Oh.
And they locked down the school just for that.
Oh, wow.
So, like, that's how, you know, heightened the security or the safety of students is, you know, it could be anything, really. Like,
yeah, because unfortunately, these situations, it's not just somebody out from the outside coming in. It could be somebody already, a student already
internally,
in there
yeah.
with whatever plan.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Like there, I'd be at a high school and we'd go on lockdown because of something not related to school or students, but it would be related, like it'd be like a block down, right? There's like a huge police presence somewhere, like maybe at a store or at a house. They just lock down the school until, you know, maybe for an hour or whenever, like, everything dies down.
Well, and that makes sense because, I mean, I feel like Santa Barbara, everything is so close.
Yeah.
Everything is so close together. I mean, we're at your apartment right now in Santa Barbara, and
the high school's like a mile away.
Well, there's a school just right down the road, right down with the street, three blocks. And then the next one is what, like maybe another three blocks from that one, and so on and so forth. So it's all just very close. So it makes sense that if something's happening somewhere, that probably all the schools are going to be, you know, taking those precautions, because you can easily get from A to Z.
Yeah.
Fairly quickly. That's insane.
But yeah, I mean, nowadays, like the heightened awareness and security, you know, like they're implementing these practices like once or twice a month, practicing, making sure they have everything, you know, they check off all the boxes, right? It's really important. I feel like no matter how scary it is to the kids, like this is our reality.
Yeah. Like, how scary or how they're, if they're over there goofing around or whatever while it's happening.
But if
hopefully some of them are taking it serious in the event that.
Absolutely. And I feel like parents should be a strong, you know, influence on taking those types of drills seriously.
Right.
Right. But unfortunately, a lot of these kids, you know, come from different backgrounds, different, you know, broken homes. I'm not assuming all of them do, but, you know, I remember, you know, me in elementary, you know, trying to be a clown, silly, fooling around, you know, immature, just stupid.
Yeah, I mean, we all.
Yeah.
And we still. We still have our moments. Yeah. Well, excuse me. Yeah, I don't know that I was very, that I was so much like trying to be a clown in school, but I know that outside of school, as I got older, it was like, I mean, I remember being at work and my mom calling me at work and then putting me on speakerphone to gather her coworkers together. She'd be like, my daughter's so funny, like, check this out, kind of a thing. And then I would be like, wait, what? You want me to make people laugh? I mean, but I mean, I know that's like different from what you were saying, but that's what that made me think about. And it was just kind of like,
I mean,
did your parents, because you were kind of like trying to be the funny kid in school, did your parents kind of expect you to be that funny kid at home?
Did they champion me to be a clown?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Or would you get in trouble for it?
Sometimes, like if I was too out of, like out of, you know, out of line or just being stupid, I don't know. Like, I mean, they wouldn't get mad at me. They knew I was just trying to be a kid or trying to be, you know, silly. I think more like more along the lines of my talents, maybe, you know, I mean, I wasn't the best, but I played sports. I played the drums during elementary. Like, we had talent shows. Like, I participated in the talent show. I didn't win, but, you know, it was cool, you know, being a part of the talent show. Or, like, I would be part of musicals. And, yeah, I try to sing, but I can't. you know, to every kid, to their parent, or, you know, every parent would champion their child of being a great singer, but mine didn't.
They're like, no, we have ears. Well, and then your mom sings, and like her family, like her sister sings.
Very embedded in music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, yeah,
very. Thea, like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. Singers. And, you know, they try to like ask me, like, can you sing? Like, they literally would
your
ask.
Your family?
Yeah. No, my Thea or like my mom would be like, all right, let's hear it.
Let's
hear it. Yeah. Like,
like, never me and
my
mind.
Sister. Yeah. Like, nope, stop. It's fine.
Well, and then that's interesting because, like, is that something that they could have maybe coached you, like giving you some singing lessons? Although I know, like, I asked your mom, like, did you take singing lessons just out of like genuine curiosity? And she was like, no, I didn't take singing lessons. And I was like, oh, excuse me, you could just sing. Sorry. But I was just giving her a hard time.
No, yeah. Well, yeah, they were just like thrown into it. Like, they had no choice.
Well, and then obviously, like, they can carry a tune. So it was like, okay, you can sing.
Yeah. I mean, when they were little, like, they were on, not trying to brag, but, you know, they were like 3 or 4 years old, little girls, mm-hmm. my mom and my aunt, you know, Debbie. And they were all on like a TV show, and they were cute. You know, they sang, mm-hmm. right? When you're that little.
Yeah.
And you try to sing, like, oh, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. But then, you know, the more and more they grew up, I think my mom started taking it seriously when she was like an adult, you know, or like
gotcha.
When she sang, mm-hmm. but I mean, more so, you know, after, you know, when my parents divorced, like she started singing in bands mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So,
well, and then you guys were, I mean, cause your parents divorced when you graduated high school or something like that. You were already older.
I was older. Yeah, for sure.
So then it was, yeah, I could see that. It's like, yeah. Okay, now I can, my kids are
grown,
quote, grown.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't need me as much, and now right. I can focus on my own thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And Beverly did talk about that, though, did she?
What?
Now that her
kids are older.
Kids are older. Like, they're in high school, right?
Or yeah, like the youngest
college,
one. Yeah.
Still in high school, and she's, you know, starting to still kind of balance her work, parenting. You know, it's kind of hard for her. You know, if she has to bring work home.
Which a lot of teachers
A lot do. Of teachers do that, which is crazy. And they also, like, they have expenses out of their own pockets.
Yeah.
Like go ahead. I'm sorry.
My sister, I want to say it was, like, her first year of teaching. She was doing her taxes. I don't know what it's like now, but I remember because I was like, what the heck? That she, like, kept all her receipts and everything and calculated everything. And out of her own pocket, she had spent $9,000.
That's insane.
Out of her own pocket.
That's insane.
And I was like, wait, what?
And you know, all respected teachers, like, they don't get paid enough. Like, teachers are still fighting to
right.
get a, you know, a decent, great wage, like, for all they do. Like, teachers in my school district, they get like a $300 allowance per year.
Oh boy.
That they, you know, the district offers teachers, and they can spend whatever they want, but it's not really whatever they want.
Yeah.
It has to be approved.
Yeah.
Or it has to be like for the classroom,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. But I mean, $300, you kidding me?
It's nothing.
Like, Karina spent $9,000 out of her own pocket. Like,
yeah.
That's just mind blowing. Yeah. Teachers, you know, we stand with you. We fight with you. Like, you guys, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are awesome.
And I was very much that parent that, and even still, I got Amazon wishlist from Jacob's math teacher. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, mm-hmm. this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we no longer, now that Jacob's, you know, in high school, and I don't think in middle school, I don't remember him getting like a school supply list. But in elementary school, I very much got all the stuff on the school supply list. And I didn't realize at the time that it was like for everybody to share. Mm. So I'm over here putting Jacob's name all over everything because mm-hmm. I thought it was like for him.
For him, yeah.
But whatever. I mean, I got all the stuff. Right.
Or for the grade, yeah.
Right. So I got all the stuff on the list. And then, like I said here recently, I received this Amazon wish list. And it wasn't just like to me, it just like went out to all the people and, you know, all the parents in the class or, you know, mm-hmm. the students that the teacher has. And so, yeah, so I went down that list and I mean, I bought stuff because I'm like, I'm thinking about, you know, my sister.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and because yeah, it's outrageous. Like, okay, you need these things. The teacher's asking for these things. So, yeah, let's help out however
okay.
we can.
We talked about this last night. Did you ever have to volunteer or put in like service hours or like, did you ever have to like.
Because I'm.
By force or like.
Right. Because you were in private school, you were talking about how your parents, they had to
volunteer or like do some type of service hours or we're talking
donation.
To my friend last night that they're required to do 30 hours.
Yeah. 30 hours a year.
A year.
And I was like, how? How do you do 30 hours? There's 52 weeks in a year. How many weeks are there in a school year? Like, how? That's ridiculous.
Well, yeah.
And then she was like, well, no, $30. If you donate $30, it's an equivalent to an hour. And I'm like, dang.
And yet again, they're paying tuition. Like, right. That's what's
$800 a month or whatever it is. Like,
well, probably more. Yeah, depending where you go. But like, You're spending this money for your child's tuition, but then again, like, that's not enough. You're still having to volunteer, community service. I get it. It's private school. You know, there are certain expenses that, you know, that I don't.
Well, right.
It doesn't really add up.
Well, like, and then you take into account that, yes, you're paying tuition, but the tuition goes to keeping the lights on, paying those teachers, quote unquote, decent salary or whatever, maintaining the staff, you know, the grounds, like all of that. So, I mean, I get it. And so maybe, you know, to keep those costs down, that's why they require parents to donate mm-hmm. time to help.
And yet again, like in public school, you don't really hear that.
Well, right.
The kids are having to do community service now.
Where I live and my experience as a mom of a school-aged child was that in elementary school, they would put out, like, they would send out, like, the sign-up genius or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, this is happening, and we need X amount of volunteers or X amount of, like, these supplies, mm-hmm. right? If you can't donate your time, if you could donate some of this stuff. And so I was always, because I work full-time, I've always been, you know, working mom or whatever, it was easier for me to donate stuff mm-hmm. or donate whatever money I could.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, sign up for the stuff that I could buy every now and again. I think maybe two or three times, you know, I requested off from work to go volunteer. Mm-hmm. And then because it was like, okay, am I going to take off work to volunteer or am I going to take off work to see my child perform?
Yeah.
During the school day or receive whatever award during the school day or attend a conference or whatever. So I had to, you know, pick and choose my time.
Yeah, your time.
Oh, there goes a train.
That train is so loud. Sorry, guys. That's my apartment. Every hour.
And the window's closed.
I know. But yeah, like in elementary, we used to have these fundraisers. But mm-hmm. like there used to be like a catalog that people would.
Oh, yes.
Like they would choose to buy, you know, kind of like the chocolates. Like you
yeah,
sell chocolate.
Yeah, gift wrap.
Gift wrap or like.
Different candies,
but these were like catalogs for like Christmas, like Reese right. or like chocolate bears or it was just like stuff. But my mom used to hustle like
Dang.
Because my mom did nails and like for every client, you know, she would ask like, hey, would you like to check out this catalog? My son's having like this, you know, it used to be a competition like
right.
after everyone and they would tally up, you know, who made the most sales out of everyone and they'd have a first and second, third place. Like my mom hustled, you know, my dad, you know, is a hairstylist. So he had clients and he would ask and usually I would get like second, third.
Dang.
And I really didn't do any of the
wow.
work. But like that, I guess that was like my parents, you know, kind of like volunteering or like,
yeah,
you know, putting in their part.
Their contribution.
And dude, like, you know, the amount of money that they would raise would be like almost a grand or like 1500. I'm like, holy, mm-hmm. like that's, you know, that's a lot of money. Well, back then in the 90s or
right.
like early 2000s. But yeah, like, you know, students now have to do 30 hours of community service each year, you know. Back
in
then,
private school or
no, in public, like where I work at the district. Okay. If you're in high school, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like middle school and elementary, you know, they don't, but they are required to, like, you know, help out in the classroom, clean up, and you know, put in their work, right? Kind of thing, help the teacher out.
At Jacob's school, they don't do that.
They don't do that, but like, oops, excuse me, and. It's a copy. And you know, me growing up in elementary, like we had to do I think like 10 or 15 hours
oh wow
of, you know, it could be anything, trash pickup
after
like our snack break. Like snack break was usually like 10 minutes. And then we, after the bell rang, like we spend 5 minutes picking up trash, like around like the bench area, the playground, stuff like that. Yeah. Like we did like chores, you know?
Okay.
So I guess it was like it taught us a lesson, you know, working or, you know, learning how to, you know, do chores or, you know, it would transfer into the house, stuff like that.
Or maybe a work.
Work, exactly. I mean, did you all have to do that?
No, well, I don't, not that I remember. I do remember, but this was like towards the end of the school year, like middle school or high school, for your lockers, it was like we had a set time. It was like, okay, now we're going to clean out our lockers. But now thinking about it, I don't know if they were doing that because they wanted, because they just imagined that we all, our lockers were all messed up because you run in there, you grab whatever, you shove whatever, you slam the door and run off to like class or wherever.
Rotting fruit on the bottom.
Yeah. Or if they were doing that like because they were looking for a paraphernalia of some sort. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Because I remember like they would have like the canine dogs too in high school.
Oh, in high school. Okay.
Yeah. So then we would have those drills sometimes, I guess, like if somebody was suspected of having whatever, then, you know, the dogs would come and then we would have to like.
In our school, well, in my high school, we didn't really have that. But if it ever happened, it wasn't like it was everyone knew about it. Like it was done in secret.
Oh, like just that one student or whatever.
That one student, yeah. They wouldn't just search everyone. They'd search, you know, like a locker and then kind of, you know, a few lockers down, the surrounding ones.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they didn't really, like, search the whole school or anything or, you know, search, like, that row of lockers. But also, we would be, you know, in class already. Like, nobody would be out in the courtyard or, like, in the quad. It would just be, you know, kind of like on the down low. So, yeah.
Hmm.
That's like part of our shelteredness in a way.
Well, and you keep using that word shelter.
Well, because we were sheltered. Like private school was very, like it was structured for us. Like very, I don't know, like, you know, uniforms. Like we had uniforms in elementary. We kind of had a dress code in high school. You know, we weren't allowed to go off campus for lunch. Stuff like that.
Well, my school, we weren't. I mean, my high school was like out in the boonies or out in the sticks, as we would say. Because literally it was like out in the middle of nowhere. Like I would ride.
You couldn't walk or like go.
Yeah, there was no off campus lunch. Because like, where are you going to go? There's nowhere. You have to drive pretty far. You're probably going to be late to your next class or whatever.
Right.
And so it, like the student parking lot, the gates were locked and you could only leave like if you had a note or if you were like in the work, whatever that work program, like where you go to school half the day or whatever, and then you go to work afterwards or for the other part of the day or whatnot. But that's the only time you could leave campus. And then also because there were a few times where, or maybe it was an urban legend, I don't know. But supposedly we also had a locked campus because some kids had like gone out for lunch or whatever, driven off for lunch, and they had gotten into car accidents.
Okay.
So to minimize that. We couldn't go off campus. So I don't know. I didn't have that either. So yeah, we were out in the sticks. And our campus, it was like the high school, the middle school that I went to, and then an elementary school. And now that whole area has just changed so much. It looks like its own little town because there's like more schools, or maybe there was like another school on there. But anyway, it just looks so different now.
No.
But yeah, I mean,
how does it feel revisiting like your elementary or like your high school? How did it feel?
So I haven't gone back to my elementary school. So I kind of went to two different elementary schools because I was elementary, like K through part of five at one elementary school, which was by my grandma's house. And my grandmother lived really close to downtown San Antonio, which is predominantly Hispanic. And it's, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say like poor, right? Like a really poor area.
Like lower middle class?
They were just poor.
Or just low.
Like that Poe.
Poe. Oh, they Poe.
So I always say like, I'm so poor, I can't even spell the whole word. I'm a Poe. But and now that neighborhood looks, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't remember it. So it's definitely like deteriorated, and you can tell like people that are there, it's hard to like get out of there, I guess. And so once my book was published and stuff, I reached out to the librarian and she was so excited, like, oh my gosh, you made it out of the, it was 78207. Like, how exciting. We would love for you to come and like inspire our kids. Right.
That's crazy.
And I very much remember being a kid at that school, and we would go to the library and we'd have presentations, and I loved it. Like it honestly made me feel like, wow, that person did that. Or I remember one time we had a Holocaust survivor come and speak to us, and just like all the things that she spoke about, what she endured. And I don't remember what she was doing now, but the thing very, you know, very much stayed in my head of like, wow, like she went through all of that. Mm-hmm. And she now is speaking to us about the possibilities of regardless of what you went through, you can still be okay. And that just like resonated with me so much, right? Like, and I didn't have these words back then, but you know, I very much, when I speak to kids now, I'm like, you know, you can turn your pain into power. Mm-hmm. And like, now it's just hitting me right now in the, like live, like, holy crap. Like that's what I got from that Holocaust survivor. But yeah, authors that would come or what have you, I mean, I was just like in awe, like tell me more, how did you do it? And so now like I'm very much like I want to do that, right? And I've gotten opportunities to do that, but one of my goals is to go back to that school. And so unfortunately
didn't work out.
It hasn't worked out yet.
Yeah,
I mean, I live here, you know, over there. I get it. Educators are extremely busy, whatever. And then they probably think, even though I did say, like, you don't have to pay me. Like, I want to do this. Mm. I want this to be a gift to you.
Give
right?
back, yeah.
Yeah, like my way of giving back. But, I mean, I'm sure they probably still feel like, oh, we have to compensate or whatever. And I mean, they don't
buy books, stuff like that.
Yeah, and they don't have a lot of resources. So anyway, so I haven't gone back to that.
Yeah, that's how our, like my school district felt, you know, like, oh, do we have to buy books, or like, how do we compensate her? You're traveling.
Right.
You know, you're coming 45 minutes away, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, it's very much like the giving back and, you know, kind of doing it for the kids.
Right.
Inspiring kids, you know, when you did the couple presentations that you did at those elementaries, you know, the kids were very engaged. They asked funny questions. It was really cool, like, to see. It was super sweet.
And for me to see, so when I went to Beverly School, because Beverly teaches at the district where I graduated from. Mm-hmm. And so in that district, I did go to fifth grade elementary for like the last part of my fifth grade year. Mm-hmm. I haven't gone back to that school, but I went to the school that Beverly was teaching at. And yeah, lots of little brown faces that look, I mean, I saw myself in those students, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And to be able to see their eyes light mm-hmm. up and like somebody that looks like me is doing that. And she's here and she cares enough to do this. And that was very much, even though obviously I didn't go to any Santa Barbara schools, but, you know, seeing those same, like, there's a lot of brown kids in the schools. And I mean, yeah, that was like everything.
Like what I do, and, you know, when I do IT, you know, like when I walk into classrooms, or especially with the, you know, the elementary kids, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, oh, Mr. Herrera or Mr. Adam, like, yay. Herrera. I know. They're like really happy to see me and there to fix their iPad and make their whole world like light up again. And, you know, they'll say, thank you, Adam, or like, thank you. Like, they're like, you know, they're super sweet. And, you know, me, I always think about that, you know, me being Hispanic, you know, working for the school district, you know, it's like a, it would seem to someone else from the outside, like as an, you know, quote unquote important job, which, you know, but it's also me, like, in a way, like giving back to my community. Like we're serving, I'm serving my community.
Right.
You know, and yeah, it's, I think about that like all the time. And it's, you know, it's really cool. Like I get to, you know, work with high school students, you know, I come across like the little rascals, but also with the other, you know, with the other, you know, like, I don't know, like what you would call them, but the other side of the student body. And like, they are very, like very receptive of what I do.
So there are like internalizers and there are externalizers. Okay. So the internalizing people, they, all their emotions, they kind of like, you know, they're very mindful. They kind of not calculate, but they kind of process everything.
Yeah.
And then they come across as like being thoughtful, being grateful, being whatever. Externalizers, they, so the internalizers, they kind of try to meet their own emotional needs and they take care, they know how to like self-soothe and whatever. And then externalizers, they're like the quote unquote, like the, what you were saying, like rascals, right? They're like, although they're not saying this, what their actions are saying is like, they need attention. They have like some emotional need, but it's coming across as like a freaking rascal.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's very different.
I was a rascal.
Oh gosh.
Still am.
but yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting how, like, going back to the inspiration for this conversation, you know, we're talking about our experiences in school, you know, K through 12, and now both of us in some aspect, we are very much giving back to that same, like kind of where we came from, right?
Maybe, absolutely.
And different because like, I'm not in San Antonio, you know, at those schools all the time or whatever. I live in California, so I'm going to school districts out here, but I'm very much investing of myself in students that are in that K through 12, because being part of, again, going back to Roy, right, and having the opportunity through his company to be part of those youth leadership programs and share my story and tell these kids that, yeah, a lot of them are externalizers, not internalizers like me, but I mean, I can definitely see in their faces of like, oh my gosh, like you look like me in the sense that like I'm a brown person.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of these kids are brown and yeah, just being able to give back and give of myself, share my experience with them and let them know, just like when I was in elementary school and that Holocaust survivor, you know, she turned her pain into power to hopefully inspire and motivate kids. It's like, I'm now doing the same or trying, doing my best.
Just to piggyback off that, as I think about it now, in high school, I really looked up to my basketball coach, Ray Vasquez.
Shout out.
Shout out to Ray Vasquez. Like, he started off at my elementary and then he went to where I went to high school, coach basketball, but he had always been my mentor in a way, especially going through, you know, my parents' divorce. Like I would, he kept an open door for me. Like he'd always, you know, welcome me in with open arms, talk about whatever I wanted to talk. Like I'd talk about, you know, anything with him, like how I felt, how angry I was. And he like walked me through those emotions and, you know, what I was feeling. And I haven't seen him since. I probably saw him once or twice after high school, but haven't seen him since. But like, he was that one person that I was like, oh shit. Like,
made an impact.
Made an impact. You know, he's Hispanic, you know, making it in the world. And he was very motivational and like inspirational. And yeah, like he was one person that, you know, I looked up to and that I thank very much. Thank you, Ray. You're the man if you're out there. But yeah.
Yeah, that's always great to have somebody. I mean, and I had mentioned this before. It was like my, second grade teacher, Mrs. Armstrong. I mean, she went to bat for me. You know, I was going through a really hard time having to go to court to testify about my child abuse, sexual abuse. And that whole experience was super scary. But to then see a teacher, like, see me and believe me so much so that she took time from her job to go and, you know, testify, answer these weird questions that they were asking her. I mean, she showed up for me. And yeah, that's amazing. But anyway. Now we're gonna go cry.
Oh, emotional thing. We're like in our feelings now. Damn it.
Now I need something stronger than coffee. No, just the other. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening, and we would love to hear your stories of, you know, who inspired you. If there was a teacher, a counselor, someone in the education system that inspired you to either be who you like. Take whatever profession you have now, or just, you know, somebody that you looked up to that you said, like, I want to be that for somebody type of thing. You know, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Instagram at Jenny's_pennies.
And I'm at DJ Adam Herrera, H-E-R-E-R-A.
Herrera. Yes. And until next time, please remember, always, your voice matters. You are capable. You are lovable. You are deserving. You are enough.